The Israel Report with Rolene Marks for the latest information and the stories behind the news.
Rolene Marks, how are you?
I'm not even going to weigh in on the energy drinks. Methinks that there was some partaking in a lot of caffeine in that studio today.
We're a bit out of control, hey? I'm finding Sasha is impossible today, Rolene. Impossible.
Hot.
Rude.
I don't know. I don't know. The truth is, Sasha, Sasha, Rolene, I'm actually very worried about Melusi Gigaba. He isn't well. He has been. He hasn't come to Parliament to answer some very important question because he's at the doctor. So I was just wondering if we need to have a former Tehillim WhatsApp group for him.
Is his doctor on a plane to Dubai?
His spin doctor most definitely is on the way back from Dubai in order to help him out. Crazy, crazy situation indeed. Rolene, let's get on to some subjects. Ahead of International Women's Day, the status of women in Israel. Let's get a bit of an update because I saw some strange comments from some parliamentarians. Please tell me it ain't so.
Sadly, it is so. We had in a Knesset meeting a Likud minister who's actually the Minister of Science, Technology and Space, and I'm thinking that maybe we should shoot him off into space. Ophir Akunis said, if you continue to whine, you won't be leaders. And this is what these are the comments he was making 2 days before International Women's Day. International Women's Day is tomorrow, and he says, should I repeat the list of women who made their mark on international leadership? In the 20th century, to be a feminist does not constantly mean saying they did this to me or that to me.
Oh, so he wasn't talking about wine as in W-I-N-E, because that would have been reasonable.
I can W-I-N-E all day long.
Exactly.
I really have no problem W-I-N-E.
You'll whine him under the table, exactly.
What an
incredibly stupid thing to say, with all due respect to him, of course.
It's extremely disrespectful to say this, especially ahead of International Women's Day, and especially in the Israeli Knesset. I think the issue, what many who are critical of the feminist movement don't understand, is not about not shaving your pits and hating men. It's that women want to be more involved, or at least make up half the percentage of decision makers in the world. And with attitudes like Ophir Akunis's, we're not off to a great start. However, we were off to a fantastic start with the first Prime Minister of Israel, David Ben-Gurion, who actually wanted more women in his Parliament. And this is actually a letter that he wrote to what was then the Witzer Women's Union, because Witzer started out as a political party, Mizrahi Women, the Women's Association for Women's Rights, and the Women's Federation of Hadassah. He said, I think the appointment of a woman to the government is a great privilege and one that is also a duty for the Yeshuv. And this was nearly 70 years ago. And I cannot help but wonder what he would think of the status of women in Israel today. I mean, if anybody says to us or talks to us about female presidents or prime ministers, we'll say, well, that's such a concept that is so 1960s.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And at a time where it just was completely unheard of around the world, actually.
Absolutely. It was unheard of, and barely into her or barely out of her teens, Israel had the first female prime minister, and we have gone on for women to hold incredible places of power within our government and within civil society. I know the head of the Zionist General Council is a woman, which is very, very auspicious. We've had a female head of the Supreme Court, a female foreign minister, our current justice minister is female. So the status of women in Israel is extremely advanced, especially in the region. However, we are not near where we want to be or need to be. There are still issues of gender disparity, unequal pay in industry and in various careers. We would like to see more women in the army, and I'm very happy to say that Witzer has a a project with the army to encourage more women officers. We would like to see the situation for women in the Arab communities more empowered, more emboldened. This is really where we lack behind. Also women in the Haredi community, we would like to see also more empowered. What is very interesting is we have more women in the Haredi community who are working in industries like high tech. They are becoming breadwinners for their families more and more often. But if we look at Israel's standing, especially in our region, we are leaps and bounds ahead of the other countries and areas in the region. And this is very, very sad. And I had a little bit of a rant earlier today about, you know, the women's movement's becoming about fashion and it's about, you know, Hollywood sexcapades, but we're not really looking at the bigger issues. And I would like to see the situation for women, especially in areas like Gaza, in Syria, in Lebanon, in Iran. I'd like to see those becoming more discussed. I don't know what your opinion is, Howard.
So I was going to ask you, is the women's movement, and there's lots of marches, and it's become an important, it really is an important movement, and whether I agree with all the nuances or not is a separate issue. But has there been any focus on Iran? And, you know, we had a situation over the last few months, and in fact, I was chatting to Hillel Neuer about it, and I asked him the question. We saw a very, very brave young woman stand up in Iran and remove her head covering because that was her choice. And she's disappeared. Nobody knows what's happened to her. And I asked Hillel Neuer the question from UN Watch, and he said, no, they actually don't know. But yet incredibly, we're not seeing support for this type of incredible, incredible bravery. What is happening what happens within the many of these women's movements that they aren't focusing on the real oppression, which is very, very often women in Middle Eastern countries and, unfortunately, women in Africa. We see what's going on in Nigeria with Boko Haram and young women who are being educated, who are being kidnapped from schools. Are these movements active in those areas?
Well, this is what I think we need to be discussing. I think issues of gender disparity and misogyny are very, very important to discuss. There's no getting away from that. But we are marginalizing our sisters from around the world. We're not talking about the brave woman of Iran and this incredible woman who removed her hijab. We're not talking about the girls in Nigeria who were kidnapped. You know, what happened to the hashtag Bring Back Our Girls campaign? We're not talking about female circumcision or honor killings, which are so prevalent across the Middle East and in Africa. These are conversations we need to be having. And as Jewish women, as Jewish Zionist women, we need to be speaking about our own feminism. You know, what we are noticing in the States, especially with these women's marches, is that if you identify as Zionist, you are being marginalized from these movements. We can see the power of somebody like Linda Sarsour, who has made such grandiose sweeping statements like Zionists can't be, or feminists can't be Zionists, and Zionists can't be feminists. Hello, who gave the world feminism.
Absolutely.
It was it came from the Zionist movements, who were among the first to work and campaign and march for women's suffrage.
Absolutely.
It is the Zionist feminists who are working for the equality of women within Israel.
Incredible. I mean, we were just jokingly talking earlier about the fact that women are finally learning to drive in Saudi Arabia. And again, complete silence from many of the feminist movements, and only focusing completely on the wrong things. I want to talk about APAC for a moment. First of all, Nikki Haley's speech speaking about powerful women was absolutely outstanding. And I don't know if anybody, I did post it to Your Afternoon with Howard Feldman Facebook page, worth going to have a look at. I think she got about 12 standing ovations. She was definitely the hero, one of the heroes of the APAC conference. But Rolene, I have no doubt that you watched that from beginning to end.
Absolutely. I watched that from beginning to end, especially since Ophir Akuna says that we women need to take lessons from Nikki Haley.
Oh, gosh. All right. Okay, he needs to stop talking.
Gladly. Yeah. Gladly. Mm. This is one area where we can agree with you. Gladly.
Absolutely.
She really is quite extraordinary. And you know what? She's an example of quite an interesting phenomenon, and so is Gal Gadot. They are not apologetic about who they are and what they stand for. And people back off.
Mm-hmm.
When you know who you are, when you're unapologetic about it, when you do it with class and integrity.
I was going to say, she really radiates class, sophistication, and intelligence.
Absolutely. Absolutely, she does. But yeah, let's talk about APAC, which has been quite controversial this year.
So tell me why.
Okay, so the executive director, Howard Kaur, came out the other day and in support of a two-state solution. And the Samaria Regional Council chairman, Yossi Dagan, has taken huge issue with this idea, as well as more right-leaning, or actually far right-leaning, American Jews who have said that the assumption has no basis. In fact, since when does APAC support a two-state solution? It's not the national guidelines of Israel. They've had a very, very, very pointed and almost aggressive attack for this. However, it must be said that Prime Minister Netanyahu has reiterated on several occasions that Israel is our standing is supportive of two-state solutions based on a negotiated settlement. And he has said time and time again that he's more than happy to meet President Abbas wherever in the world he wants to meet. The practicalities of a two-state solution, when or how it can be carried out and if it is sustainable is another issue altogether. But the issue on the table here is that we seem to have a great disparity between the so-called settler movement and APAC and our government.
I'm surprised this issue hasn't come up before. In fact, I found it quite strange that APAC wouldn't have an official stance with regard to a way forward.
Well, this is confusing, and I think APAC has made it very, very clear where they stand. We have two great camps in the world with regards to a negotiated settlement in the Middle East. On the one hand, we've got people saying a two-state solution is fast eroding and becoming an idea of the past, and we have others who are pushing quite strongly for a two-state solution. The reality of the matter is that a one-state solution is not going to work. We've got two people who want to divorce from each other, and depending on what from which side you look at it, some rather acrimoniously, some with as much dignity and as little acrimony as possible, and some who would prefer a one state. And I would actually ask those who do, and I know there are some amongst the far right and the far left, what are you expecting from a one state solution? We know that this would be the end of a Jewish democracy as we know it. We know that that's the end game of the BDS movement. Do these two sides not see that they actually agree with each other, that a one state would be the destruction of the state of Israel? And our government is very, very well aware of this.
Absolutely right. Very, very interesting indeed. Finally, the one subject I wanted to also circle back to is we've spoken a lot about the Polish situation and the tensions that have existed, have started developing over the last while with regard to behavior by the Polish government. But Polish lawmakers have now condemned anti-Semitism and a 1968 massacre of Jews.
Well, I felt that it was very important to talk about this because we have been speaking about Poland, and I got a report today in my email anti-Semitic incidents around the world for the month of February, you know, just what everybody wants in their email. And the list from Poland is extremely long. It's longer than any other country. So we have members of parliament from Warsaw who have overwhelmingly condemned anti-Semitism. And also have condemned a anti-Semitic purge that took place in 1968. And what they voted in a, or they voted on a resolution yesterday to honor mass communist protests, and included in the language of this resolution was to condemn this anti-Semitic purge. And this is so important coming at a time where there has been support for this, Polish Holocaust bill. We need to hear from lawmakers. We need to hear that there are elements within the Polish community, especially the political establishment, that aren't going to stand for anti-Semitism of any kind.
Very, very interesting indeed. And I guess it is some positive news, whether it's a concession or whether it's just trying to placate the communities is, I guess, a separate question, but at least it is being done. Rolien Marks, thank you, as always, for a detailed and informed and passionate Israel report. And we will speak to you same time, same place tomorrow on Whiskey Thursday. That is...
I think after this week, I need a whiskey.
Or two. Or maybe... Maybe a wine.
I think we're going to step up. It appears I've whined enough. I'm going to have to whiskey.
We're going to have to whiskey. No doubt about that. Time is 5:58. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your afternoon with me. That was the Israel Report, brought to you, of course, by the Blue Agency.